Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Turbo Time podcast. I'm your host, Alyssa Maripodi, the editor of Turbo Machinery International. And today we are talking about microreactors. So as their name implies, microreactors are compact, portable reactors that produce thermal energy. And that energy can be used as heat or it can be converted to electric power. So some of their benefits are due to their size. You know, they can be quickly deployed and installed. And when they utilize a responsive design concept, not only can overheating be prevented, but they require fewer components, fewer operators, and less maintenance. So with me today to talk about microreactors is James Montgomery, the chief design engineer at Rolls-Royce, and John Mason, the technical specialist in system design integration at Rolls-Royce. So they are going to lead our discussion today as we take a deeper dive into the benefits of microreactors, including their use of nuclear technology and how they are designed to support remote civil and industrial power. So welcome to you both, of course, and thank you so much for being here and coming on the show today.
Great to be with you.
Thanks for having us.
So can we start by just having you reintroduce yourselves and kind of give us an idea of what you do inside of Rolls-Royce? And then I like to kind of start with the basics so we're all on the same page. So can you tell us what a microreactor is and then perhaps how it differs from a small modular reactor?
It's James Montgomery here. I'm the Chief Design Engineer for the Rolls-Royce Novel Nuclear Team here in the UK. My responsibility is for the design of the overall microreactor plant.
And John Mason, I'm a Systems Design and Integration Technical Specialist. I work within the Novel Concepts team here in Bristol in the UK within future programs. And my responsibilities are around the power conversion system that goes with these microreactors, so essentially the turbo machinery that will take heat from the reactor and convert that into usable electrical power.
Yeah, so when we talk about a microreactor, we're talking about a very small scale fission plant in the range of 1 to 10 megawatts electrical, and that'll compare with a typical grid supplying power plant that's in the gigawatt range. And also with the new generation of small modular reactors that are in a sort of a half gigawatt range. So we're much smaller than that. And we have two potential applications for the microreactor technology we're working on here in the UK. The first one is the terrestrial variant for supplying power to different applications on the Earth. And the second one is the space microreactor, which has potential applications for the lunar base as part of the space program, and also in the longer term for power and propulsion applications on satellite and deep space missions.
Okay, so can you talk about what goes into designing a microreactor and perhaps how they're customized?
Yeah, sure. So here at Rolls-Royce, we have a great pedigree in designing complex systems like this. So the first step in that process is to work with potential end users to understand the user requirements and the use cases and where we can get value from the technology. And then we'll work through the process of preliminary design and sizing the plant, understanding what the technology can do and where the technology gaps might be. And that then launches us into a technology program to acquire the technologies we need. Now, the microreactor plant is really interesting from that point of view because it is a genuine new product for us here at Rolls-Royce, as with the rest of the industry. So we're piecing together some of our pedigree from the nuclear side that we have in Rolls-Royce and also the turbo machinery side that we developed over many years for aerospace and industrial applications. And John can talk a little bit to that.
Yeah, so across the Rolls-Royce group, we've got experience in a number of different industries and capabilities. So we have the well-known large civil engines that power the airliners. We are engaged in combat aircraft, military transport, and we also have a large element of the business that looks at turbo machinery for turbo compressors, so the kind of centrifugal machines, turbochargers for yachts, large mining, industrial applications and things like that. So we can pull on all of those capabilities and experience to apply them to these new industries, new technologies.
So in the intro, I touched on a few of the advantages that microreactors offer, but can you give us a more detailed look at their advantages and what environments or locations that they work best?
Sure. So let's talk about the terrestrial variant of the microreactor first. If you imagine a small-scale power plant in a shipping container-sized envelope, that's our vision for the microreactor, and that you might be able to deploy it into a remote location where access to fossil fuels supply chain is really difficult. The great thing about the microreactor is that it, depending on the size and the detailed design, we think we can fuel it for 5 to 10 years of operation from new, which means that you know, if you are a remote island community or a remote mining community or a remote military installation, it makes you resilient to the risks around the fossil fuel supply chain. And also, as a net zero technology in itself, it removes the reliance on fossil fuels for communities like that, that everyone is challenged with at the moment. When we talk about the space microreactor, that's a completely different application, clearly, and there's a number of different missions at the moment that are looking to use these kind of power plants. In particular, NASA's Fission Surface Power Program, as part of the Artemis missions, is looking to develop a power plant for use in the lunar base. And there, that's all about operating in areas where the solar power is limited, particularly around the south pole of the moon, that where we're looking to explore at the moment. So having a nuclear source that that can run day and night reliably is really a game changer for the concept of operations that NASA have for the moon base. And in the longer term, for a similar reason, nuclear power can be used as a source of power for propulsion in space missions, particularly for deeper space missions where the solar resource becomes weaker. And that's a really exciting prospect. So people will be aware that the Artemis missions are ultimately aiming to build an infrastructure out to Mars. And so some of the interesting application of this kind of technology could ultimately extend to propulsion for those kind of missions to Mars.
And from a power conversion point of view, again, the answer is very different between the terrestrial applications and those for space. So for terrestrial, we're more akin to how some of our naval applications are designed and packaged to fit into a into an ISO container or something like that to be easily transported. Essentially, what we're doing there with an open Brayton cycle is simply replacing the combustion chamber where we'd normally burn the fuel with a heat exchange to the reactor. Where things get very interesting for us from a power conversion point of view is for the space application. So we're looking at Brayton cycles again there, but obviously operation in space, that needs to be a closed cycle, so we can't continue to take air in the front and push it out the back of the cycle. So what we need to do is take the exhaust gas out the back of the turbine for the turbo machinery, and recondition that flow back to kind of where we started from before it re-enters the compressor. So we're looking into how to best do that in the most efficient way, with recuperation, intercooling, and various other things that we can do, and we're essentially just returning the exhaust flow back to the same pressures and temperatures you started at, so you can put it through the cycle again. So that leads us to some new and interesting challenges that we will have to overcome, but it also gives us a number of additional design levers that we don't normally have. So it being a closed cycle, we can change the working fluid that we use on these systems, so we don't have to use air like we normally do with the open cycles for civil aircraft and things like that. And we can also change the start conditions, so we can change the pressures and temperatures at the beginning of the cycle to optimize it. And depending on the requirements of the system, we can pick and choose where the design point of the turbo machinery sits.
So you did mention a bit of the nuclear energy and how they use that. Can you expand on that a little bit and perhaps its role in a sustainable future?
Yeah, sure. One of the key technologies that enables this microreactor application is the development of coated particle nuclear fuel called TRISO fuel. And this is game changing for the industry because you imagine a kernel of uranium fuel coated in different layers of carbon-like material that have different functionalities for protecting the fuel from overheat, but also for containing the fission products within that small particle. And being able to contain the fission products within that particle in a resilient way means that potentially we can simplify the design of the rest of the plant and hence enable the much smaller plants than we've historically been able to achieve safely. And so that that nuclear fuel technology is kind of game changing for us. And there are other aspects of the plant as well that are being looked at within industry to enable a passively safe nuclear design. And by that, we mean it's effectively fail-safe in the way that it responds to different failure modes. Clearly, that's super important in being able to access these remote locations and applications that we're looking at for a microreactor.
Yeah, so leading on from that, in terms of the power conversion side of things, the key impact of the reactor and the heat transfer from the reactor into our cycle is the peak temperature that goes with the fuels and the technologies of that reactor. So those are much lower than the operating temperatures of the kind of the civil airliners that yield or the engines for those. So the technologies for the power conversion and the Brayton cycle is not being pushed by the temperature levels of the cycle. It gives us other headaches in terms of trying to design the cycle for a very high efficiency to minimize the size of the overall system and the reactor core and the amount of fuel that you need for the lifetime of the application.
Okay, so you guys have, you've touched on a lot, but can you kind of tell me what's new in terms of design? Again, there may be some, repeat of what you already said. I have read about smaller unit designs and models that utilize passive safety systems and, responsive designs, what I had mentioned in the intro. So maybe you could speak to the types of advancements and their advantages and whatever else.
Yeah, sure. I mean, one of the really interesting aspects of the application for the terrestrial microreactor is the need to be able to transport it to site, to remote site, and operate it there. The means of doing that safely. So as part of our concept, we're looking at the idea that we'll have a containerized solution ship it to site using conventional transport means. And that in itself poses its own design challenges in the way that you transport the radioactive fuel and the spent fuel on when the site's being decommissioned. There's a lot of work in the industry looking at that. And you can imagine that gives a really flexible solution to the customer potentially, because you could have multiple modules of nuclear reactors to create the nuclear heat, combined with multiple modules of John's power conversion technology to be able to scale the plant to different applications, also potentially including the supply of heat for chemical industrial processes too. So there's a at the application level, there's a lot of kind of flexibility that we can build into our offering here. Do you want to talk about how that's being managed at a power conversion and turbo machinery level, John?
Yeah, sure. So it's I guess part of the thing that is unusual for us is that the primary fluid that we're using within the Brayton cycle actually provides the coolant for the reactor as well. So there's a lot of scenarios that we don't normally face in the design of the system that we need to incorporate additional functionality for, make sure there's the right redundancy to provide the safety case for these reactors. So there are cases that in a normal application for, say, a civil airliner where you would just reduce the power or shut the engine down and rely on other engines on the aircraft to complete the flight safely. That may not be the right answer for some of these cases on the nuclear side, because we need to continue to provide the flow to cool the reactor. So that will have a big impact on what the system actually looks like. There's also a big impact from the environment that we're going to operate some of these systems in. So there are opportunities to use these in various different conditions, which may be from very cold kind of Arctic or conditions down to hot kind of desert mining communities and things like that. Those intake conditions for the terrestrial system have a very big impact on the performance of the system. So for a common design, we need to incorporate that into what the system looks like and what the turbine machinery looks like to ensure good performance and efficiency and throughout each of those cases. And then if we think about the space conditions for the lunar applications, the day to night time temperatures outside the system can vary between 100 degrees Kelvin and around 385 Kelvin. So that's nearly minus 300 Fahrenheit to plus 230 Fahrenheit. That will have a huge impact on our ability to reject heat from the system through the radiators to return the fluid back to its starting condition before it goes back through the compressor. So from a systems level point of view, there are many things that we need to think about, and which do we design for peak efficiency of the power conversion, which minimizes the size of the reactor plant that you need to launch and the amount of fuel you need to take with you? Or do you design for the minimum possible size of radiators that you have to package into the rocket to get them there in the first place? There's many things that we have to think about that we don't normally consider in the design.
Yeah, and just finishing off that point, this is a really interesting product for us because it brings together all of our aerospace heritage and all of our knowledge on how to build lightweight aerospace systems with all of our nuclear heritage. But of course, this is our first nuclear application where weight has been a real concern, both from a transport point of view for the terrestrial reactor and also for the space reactor, where the payload mass and volume is one of the key constraints on the system. So that's giving us a real challenge and driving us into some really interesting packaging solutions for the space reactor in particular.
Yeah, the design aspect of this is fascinating. So thanks for going into that. Is there anything else you guys want to add that I didn't ask or we haven't touched on yet?
Yeah, so one of the other really interesting aspects for this program is the operating model for the reactor, because traditional microreactors have been very secure and very operator heavy, with a significant personnel presence on site. And clearly, for the terrestrial version of the microreactor, moving into the next generation of nuclear plants, one of the things that we will be challenged with is to become more and more autonomous in the operation of the plant, but obviously doing that in a way that is safe and secure. And that's an interesting challenge for the terrestrial variant, but an even more interesting challenge for the space variant. I mean, clearly, the ability to have skilled and trained nuclear operators close to the plant on the lunar base is going to be really difficult. So when it comes to design for reliability and design for the operator, there's an awful lot of thinking to be done that will need to be done in collaboration with the regulatory authorities too.
Okay. Thank you guys so much. This was really informative and insightful. So thank you for coming on the podcast today.
Yeah, our pleasure.
Thank you very much.
And thank you to our audience for tuning in today. I'm your host, Alyssa Maripodi, and we will see you next time.